This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
As more of the country starts to reopen, is the worst of the COVID economy behind us? From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio. New York City is opening up. We had surprise job growth last week, 2.5 million jobs. Things are maybe looking up. And I realize the markets are really not the best judge of current events, but they seem pretty optimistic. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 277 points. That's more than 1%. The S&P 500 is up 0.5%. The NASDAQ up a little less than 0.1%. Even 10-year Treasury yield is at 0.9%. Things are looking not bad. Julia Coronado is founder of Macro Policy Perspectives. Hey, Julia.
Good morning.
So, look, New York City's starting to reopen today. We have other states like Massachusetts starting to enter different phases of reopening. Is the market drawing a lot of confidence from this?
Yeah, the market is pretty focused on the reopenings and has been taking a lot of optimism from them. However, we are starting to see in the states that reopened first, rising levels of coronavirus, even controlling for the increased testing that they're doing. So in contrast to New Zealand, which didn't open up until the disease was eradicated, we're opening up into still elevated levels of coronavirus.
Do you think that if we start seeing positive tests rise in a substantial way, it could shake market confidence in a big way?
It depends on how much it shakes consumers' confidence. So if consumers start to see this and behave more cautiously as a result, then opening up won't result in the level of activity that we would want it to lead to. That's the risk of opening up with still elevated levels of the virus, is that people will still behave very cautiously, knowing that that's a real risk that they face, and therefore opening up will still mean that business activity and economic activity is pretty subdued.
All right. Julia Coronado, founder of Macro Policy Perspectives. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
There's news this morning of a potential mega merger in the pharmaceutical industry. AstraZeneca, working on a potential coronavirus vaccine, reportedly wants to purchase Gilead, the maker of a promising treatment for COVID-19. Marketplace's Nova Sappho has more on that.
UK-based AstraZeneca approached Gilead about a possible merger last month, according to Bloomberg, which said the two companies are not in formal talks. Combined, the two firms would create a drug industry behemoth worth about $230 billion, offering medicines on both fronts of the coronavirus fight. AstraZeneca is in a tie-up with the University of Oxford to manufacture a COVID-19 vaccine. Last week, the company announced it had secured global manufacturing capacity for 2 billion doses. Gilead makes remdesivir, a drug that appears to quicken recovery in patients hospitalized with COVID-19. It's already in high demand, with the U.S. government's supply of the drug running low. Sales of remdesivir could top $7.5 billion in 2 years, while the development of a safe vaccine is still in the research phase. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
AstraZeneca's shares, by the way, are currently down more than 3%.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
The National Association for Business Economics just released its June 2020 Outlook survey looking at how U.S. GDP is going to do over the next year or so. All said and done, the U.S. economy is going to shrink almost 6% this year, they say. But we are almost done with the worst of it. They predict we'll be growing again in July, August, September. Constance Hunter is president of the NABE. She's also the chief economist at KPMG. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your panelists are forecasting a 33% drop in the second quarter GDP. That's on an annualized basis. That is staggering. But then when are we going to see things turn around?
Most of the panelists believe that the first positive quarterly change in GDP will come in Q3. But here we need to stress that when we have a large decline in quarterly annualized GDP growth, that is not indicative of the trend going forward. We should see it bounce back up. And then really thinking about when are we going to get back to the pre-COVID levels? And that is something that most economists do not expect until either the second half of 2021 or the first half of 2022.
What are the drivers behind that?
Really, the health outcomes will drive all of the economic outcomes. And there seems to be an implicit assumption that we will have better treatment protocols. There is a real focus that the risks to the economy are centered on the disease, the protocols around how we interact with it until we have a vaccine, and then ultimately having a vaccine. Now that we've had parts of the economy open, we're going to see how much social closeness we should be actually having.
Constance Hunter, president of the NABE and chief economist at KPMG, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sabri.
This week, a Russian tanker ship will deliver a cargo of natural gas to China. The interesting thing here is how it's getting there and when. The ship took the Arctic route across the top of the world, and this is the earliest time in the year that risky journey through the Northeast Passage has ever been made. Why? Because there's less ice in the sea. The Arctic is warming at twice the rate of the planet overall, so less ice. Marketplace's Scott Tong has more.
This voyage is a test case for a Russian energy company that wants to ship natural gas to China throughout the summer. The Arctic route lops off more than 10 days from the traditional trip. Mediterranean, Suez Canal, India. But the Arctic's risky.
This route is not ice-free at this time of year at all.
Julian Struva is an Arctic climate scientist at the University of Manitoba.
What I guess is more important, I suppose, for the ship is how thick that ice is. But it looks like the ice is less than a meter thick at the moment, which is quite thin.
Thin, she says, because the winter season to grow ice gets shorter every year. NASA says the average temperature in the Arctic is 7 degrees warmer than 1960. Malte Humpert at the Arctic Institute think tank says the Russian tanker en route to China can handle this ice.
If they encounter really severe ice, they can actually turn the ship around. And the back of the ship is a lot more hardened, so they turn the ship around and they can ram through the more severe ice. And then once they're through that, they turn around again and they go normal direction forward, which is more efficient.
The whole idea is to exploit Arctic warming, even as critics fear it'll pollute the air and the water. Last week, a Russian power plant leaked thousands of tons of diesel into an Arctic waterway. Still, Russia's investing $300 billion this year into the region. It's not a sure moneymaker. Heather Connolly at the Center for Strategic and International Studies says equipment and insurance are pricey, and you never know the selling price for oil or gas.
Vladimir Putin has put his own prestige on the line with Arctic development, as well as Russia's economic future.
There are other countries betting on a warmer Arctic to get access to minerals, commercial fishing, even for pipeline building.
China is investing more in infrastructure all along the Arctic routes. You're starting to see where Russia and China are really working together now.
The U.S. and Canada also have interest there. Connolly calls the Arctic a new spot for great power competition. To be sure, it'll get easier to cross the Arctic because of how fast the ice is melting. So says Donald Perovich at Dartmouth. He studies sea ice.
It's highly reflective. And when you lose this highly reflected sea ice and replace it by the dark ocean that absorbs more sunlight, you can get a positive feedback loop.
Losing sea ice is what he calls a climate change amplifier. Perovich says 3 decades ago, no one considered steaming across the Arctic. 3 decades from now, he says, it'll be straightforward. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.